things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that look so much that it don't have now.
Here we go.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. It is Cinco de Mayo, and I had tacos for lunch. Will Joe eat any type of tacos?
Zero tacos.
Zero tacos. No
this is zero taco day.
Zero taco day. You don't celebrate Cinco de Mayo. You don't have a sombrero in the back.
Not on the agenda for today.
Nothing. No, it's just fun. And we were down here for the National Day of Prayer and then slipped over for some tacos before I came here. So I have to talk about this because I think it's important on a couple of fronts. We got to talk about the leak from the Supreme Court. I just think everybody's talking about it, and we often talk about free speech and all of that, and I'm all for less secrecy and more exposure, but obviously a leak like that is not just inappropriate, but probably whichever clerk, justice, whoever did it is probably going to get in some sort of career trouble. I don't know if they'll necessarily go to jail. I don't think they broke any criminal statutes, but there's a good possibility that they could be disbarred or impeached or.
Joe's prediction, you'll never know who it is and they won't get anything. Like Will Smith, he can go slap anybody he wants and nothing happens.
Speaking of Will Smith.
Yes.
And we'll come back to the leak from the Supreme Court. But did you see Dave Chappelle got tackled on stage? And they catch the guy in the back, and there's like a picture of the dude's arms like broken and all sorts of stuff taken to the ambulance. But did you see Chris Rock come up at the end? It was the best line of the night. He was like, "Was that just Will Smith?"
Yeah. See what happens? It emboldened that kind of behavior. And now everybody thinks if you disagree with somebody, you can go slap them up and it's tolerated. So
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I didn't see Will Smith's arm getting broken.
No, security did not.
I'm salty on that still.
Well, but so this comes out of supposedly a clerk or a justice or a team of people released this. And, you know, everybody pretty much across the board agrees that that's not appropriate.
Right.
But regardless, I think, you know, everybody on there's already, you know, media misinformation. There's stuff on the left, on the right. You know, there's probably some people that think that us two, you know, middle-aged white guys probably shouldn't be talking about a woman's reproductive right to choose. First, I find it fascinating that immediately in the news cycle, we now know what a woman is. I just think that's hilarious.
We've established that.
The you know, Supreme Court justice that was being interviewed by Congress couldn't define what a woman was. But all of a sudden, biology is back intact. We have women's right to choose. And everybody's confident and comfortable that women give birth. And that's the ability they've been given both by their biology and, in my case, by their creator. So, you know, I look at all of this and there's just a lot of noise around it. Bottom line, I think it's going to be really good for us as a nation and the court in the long run. There's a lot of noise right now, but in the long run, it's actually going to depoliticize the court. It's going to send the right to figure this stuff out back to the states. And because realistically, the court itself, people don't understand what Roe v. Wade is and don't understand that decision. It was never a pro-abortion, anti-abortion. They weren't making a moral stance on it. It led to some stuff that people, you know, argue on moral grounds. But all Justice Alito said in his leaked decision was essentially that this isn't something that's enshrined to the Constitution. It's not something we should have ever made a decision on. Right. So therefore, we send it back to the states.
Absolutely.
So he didn't say whether he agreed with abortion, disagreed with abortion. He didn't say whether people should be able to choose, shouldn't be able to choose. He didn't tackle or touch any of that. He gave a lengthy history, and then he essentially said, "This is an issue that should be decided by the states." Now we'll see when it's finally released in its finished form. What that'll look like and what the dissents will look like. What's Joe's take on all of this?
Well, Libertarian Joe loves the fact that anytime something gets defederalized, I'm a happy guy, right? Because I think they're the worst to be in charge of anything. Like if I could take everything away from them, I probably could. Now, maybe not. There's some things maybe I'd let them have. But the leaks concern me. Anytime you get a politicized ability for somebody to take information they shouldn't leak and use it for political purposes, that should carry huge gravity with it. You know, never. And I can remember back when it was political season, part of the campaign strategy was to unearth something that nobody should know about and mail documents nobody should have. And that just irritated me a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. You know, realistically, you get into that space and what is the purpose in releasing the document? You go back to motive. Now, nobody knows who it was. Perhaps it was somebody on the right. We don't know. But looking at it, you go, all right, what are the motivations? Why would they do something like this? What's the purpose in this? Certainly wasn't for transparency's sake or education. Right. You know, it was obviously a political advantage, and it certainly drummed up the, you know, I don't know if people think that it will sway the justices. I hope it doesn't, in the sense that the court's supposed to not care what the mob thinks, and it's supposed to not care what anything but the rule of law thinks. And so in that sense, I hope that, you know, the justices that, you know, have decided in this case will, you know, hold firm and not allow the, because the mob's fickle. And, you know, the mob goes back and forth and, you know, can't really make up its mind usually. And, you know, it just, again, puts you in that place where I think a lot of the country doesn't understand the purpose of the Supreme Court. They see it as a super legislature rather than as the third branch, the judicial branch. Realistically, if you believe that abortion should be enshrined in the Constitution, there's a process to put it in there. You know, you can get 2/3 of the state on board and you can vote on it. And there's a whole way to do that. We've had other amendments pass in the last 100 years. Not an easy task, but certainly there is a path for it. If you think it's good legislation, there's a way to do that. You know, we have the Congress and Senate and all of that and the president, and there's certainly things that can be done. But if those things don't happen, the court doesn't get to decide that that should be a good thing. It should be a part of the Constitution. That's not the way that that works. And that's, well, simply what Justice Alito
said. We say that we don't want the court to be political, but it is a political body. Like, we say that it shouldn't be, but it totally is. Right. And so, like, if its whole obligation is to look at the Constitution and see if things are constitutional, then every justice should be a constitutionalist, not sure. Somebody like, hey, here is a guy that really likes killing his people. Let's put him on the humanitarian. You know what I mean? That's, yeah, I doesn't mean, make a lot of sense.
That's what that's the UN does. Sorry. Shots fired.
Salty.
You know, stick China on there. Stick right, Iran on right, there. That's put them on saying. The Human like, Rights Council. Totally
but
makes
then
sense.
You can't complain that you get sort of the opposite of what the function of the job is supposed to be when you put people on there that hold counter idealistic or philosophical, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I in the long run, I think if this decision holds and it, you know, becomes the law of the land that the states could decide, I actually think it's a really good thing for the country. And I think it's a really good thing for the court. I think it will depoliticize a lot of that stuff. A lot of the social issues that they've tackled that aren't necessarily constitutional decisions probably shouldn't have been tackled. And I think that's true both on the left and the right. And thank God for, you know, a Supreme Court and the structure of our founders that they can overturn some of this bad, you know, previous decisions or even bad legislation. Otherwise, we'd still have slavery. We would still have a bunch of stuff. So thank God that we have a mechanism that can go back and say, hey, I know we did this, but we can correct it. And that's true. I think on both sides of the aisle, there's some things that, you know, need corrected. And it's good to have a body in place that has a philosophy and a document, like you're saying, that should supersede personal feelings.
Right. Now, you mentioned that with slavery, and I often look at that, like, as a student of history, you look back and some of the things we're most not proud of,
sure,
and those blemishes on our history were moments like that where we had to go through our moral conscience and find out how we wanted to operate. I feel like this is one of those issues is we're going to look in the future and look at ourselves and say, what the hell were we thinking?
Yeah, totally agree. It's a, when you look at, I've seen a meme going around, but when you look at countries that allow abortion up till birth, it's the United States, China, and North Korea.
Great company.
Right.
Yes.
And then, you know, other European nations obviously have, and other countries throughout the world have certain limitations, but we are some of the most liberal people when it comes to allowing, you know, for abortions to take place up to a certain point. And so, you know, across the board, you know, if you're strictly going Democratic and you're looking at polling, and I don't think you do moral issues by polling because people aren't always moral.
Right.
So, but even when you look at it with polling, Most people agree that there should be some level of regulation and that all the way up to birth is not a good thing.
But because it's political, it's binary. It's like A or like most of the objections that you have, the people that are pro or against, all of those we can tackle if we look at them on their, but what happens in this instance, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And this is blah, blah, you know, and not, it doesn't have to be a ban it entirely or make it as open as entirely. Yeah.
Well, I think that's probably leads us to a greater issue in our system in general. And our founders are not, were not stupid. They understood that some of this gridlock was a good thing.
Right.
They put it in place so that we would grind to a halt at certain things, right, so that one side of the country couldn't just steamroll the other side. And I guarantee you when, whether the left's in power or the right's in power, the other side loves the tool of the filibuster, loves the minority tools that they put in place for a reason.
But it's when he's used against them
that they don't like
change.
It. Right.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole thing is like, you know, we need to live within the confines of the rules. And I think that's true whether my preferred politicians are in place or not. So when you look at that, I think, and you look at the country in general, you talk about the binary side of things. So when legislation comes up or, you know, you talk about the Build Back Better, right? So infrastructure, all of that, you know, they put these, you know, 3,000 page bills together with all sorts of garbage in it, stuff on, and then they go, well, you don't believe in infrastructure. I was like, no, I don't believe in the other 2,900 pages. And it's the same thing with healthcare, same thing with a number of these things, and even some of these budget bills. I loved, I think it was Senator Cruz suggested during the 2016 primary, he said that we should be able to file income taxes on a index card and every bill should be one page and easy to read. And I think it, like simplifying some of that stuff makes a ton of sense to me.
Sure.
Because there's some stuff in Build Back Better that if you broke out as an individual thing, like we want to fix these five bridges, you're going to have 100-0 and right, everybody's going to sign on there, or maybe 98-2, whatever
and
it
honestly,
is.
Honestly, the naming conventions of these things
being
marketing. So like, correct, here's the bill of we drown puppies, right? And it's like, you support the we drown puppies bill?
Right. Well, and you saw that in Florida with the yes, parents' rights bill, right, and the media framed it as the don't say gay bill, and you know nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
So when you look at that, I think the more simplification we can do, the more productivity we can have. And I think that's true across the board in life. So, you know, take it out of the realm of politics. You know, there's lots of people that you'll meet. There are some people that have vastly different ideologies, careers, even political aspirations. But if I look at the totality and you say, oh, do you agree with that person? Well, no. But you know what? We both agree that homeless people should be taken care of. So let's get together on the one thing.
How to is the only thing we disagree on.
Correct. And so I think in some of those instances, even relationally practicing it, we do it on a micro level, mm-hmm, right? We all work with people that are like, man, I would never treat my wife that way, or I'd never, you know, we don't endorse their whole world. But
notice when it goes in the political realm, everybody gets crazy and we can't do that anymore.
Correct. And that's what I'm saying. I think across the board, we need to come back to a place, not to compromise values, but I think there are those things where you have 80% agreement from people, sure, that are common sense things like, hey, we need to fix those bridges. I don't think we need to do this, this, and this. You know, that's, everybody disagrees on that. But can we just put the one thing down that we do agree on and like actually get something done?
Make it on one sheet of paper, exactly, make it simple, and then move on to the next one.
And I find that to be true in church. I'm sure you find that to be true in business. You know, yeah, if we sit down and we look at the totality of somebody's life, I'm not going to agree with everything in their world. I'm not going to agree with the way they run their money. I'm not going to agree with all of that. But I can agree with this sliver and still not endorse the whole thing. And I think that's the other problem is the moment you say things like, well, I think this is a good idea, they're like, oh, well, you agree with obviously this whole platform over. No, I didn't say that. I said that this piece is good and I can agree with this piece and disagree with the other 85%. And I think that's the space we've lost, that nuance, because it's easier to be binary and it's easier to categorize us into us and them rather than this is a we thing. So how do we get out of this?
So we'll put it in, frame it almost like your cable bill. right? You go to your cable company and say, hey, you sell me all these channels. I don't watch very many of them. I don't want to pay the whole bill, right? You put all these things together.
Correct.
Like, we don't want to do that. Can you space them out? Let me just buy what I want. They're going to say, well, if we do that, there's some channels in here that will go out of business and have no money, and you'll never vote for that one. So if you want that one to go away, then go ahead and break it up. And that's sort of like that, that precipice. I'm okay with those things going away, 100%. So if we're not funding the mating habits of goose in Canada, right? I'm okay with that, right? Yeah. Let it go away. And if you want, if it's super important to you, then put that one down. And then I'll be like, okay, cool. I believe in your little goose to hunt whatever thing. I'm coming up with some examples today.
Yeah. So we don't want mating gooses in Canada, Joe.
No mating gooses and no drone puppies.
No drone puppies. Those are important bills.
Yes.
you know, I think our kids are losing some of this nuance. So I really try and do this. So when we disagree, right? I'm sure you and I have had disagreements at points. I'm sure you've had disagreements with other employees or even other companies. You know, Pastor Mike sitting over here in the studio, we have certainly had plenty of disagreements where you come and I've said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And no, I don't think you should do it. I think you should do it that way. And we'll disagree on some of those things. And what I find with my kids, so my boys love to play football and they play with the next door neighbor and his friend. And they'll play out there, and they were playing basketball the one day, and the kid next door goes, Doug, could you stay out here and referee? I'm like, no. I was like, you guys call fouls and just figure it out. And they will bicker, and they don't know how to disagree and compromise. And so every time they ask me to intervene, I'm like, no, you guys sort it out. I don't care if you got a straw vote. I don't care. And I get it. They get frustrated because it feels like gridlock because somebody says, well, you fouled me. No, I didn't foul you. And then you have this back and forth, and it's going to take somebody to be an honest broker and somebody to learn some negotiating skills. And I refuse. And I even do this with my boys because they will wrestle and beat the snot out of each other. And then they'll come and say, oh, he hit me. And I'm like, why are you telling me? And I know that sounds like bad parenting, but no, I'm teaching them the skill. Like, you need to go back, tell your brother that you didn't like that, have the conversation, negotiate. And if he's being mean-spirited, if it's whatever, like, I don't mind superseding every once in a while, but if I step in every time, you're never going to learn how to fight for yourself. You're never going to learn how to negotiate. You're never going to learn how to compromise. And, you know, my kids are going to do some things in the coming years. God forbid, but they are. They're going to do some things that I go, that is not the way I would do that. And a bad parent, in my opinion, will step in and supersede that and disable them from making decisions. I love the way my mom did this. I can remember, you know, coming up as a teenager, having to step out and make decisions or in relationships. I would want to do X or I'd want to do Y. And I would come to my parents because, you know, a big decision or whatever. I was going to spend a bunch of money or I was going to take a job or not play a sport or whatever. And I would have this conversation. And most parents, and I youth pastor for a number of years, will tell their kids, you know, I really think you should do this. And this is why, and here are the 15 reasons I'd be really disappointed if you don't. And it's like, all right, weight of the world. I guess I better do what my parents tell me. Right. My mom was brilliant at this. She would listen through and she did this and she still does this. I'll call her for advice and she'll listen and listen. And she very rarely tells me what she thinks until after I've made the decision. And she'll say, I was really hoping you were going to go in that direction. And here's why. And this is what I saw in the beginning. But I can remember being 14, 13, 15, whatever. And I would come with a, you know, big crisis for a 14-year-old or whatever. And I would sit down and I'd say to my mom, my dad, my dad was a little more direct. My mom was really good at this. And she would listen to me all the way through. And she would say, well, all right, well, what options do you have? And I can remember, well, I said, A, I could do this. Or, you know, sometimes I say, well, it's threefold or twofold. You know, I could do this or I could do that. And I would list out the options. And she would go, okay, if you do this, what happens? You do that, what happens? And she would just lead me through with questions. And she would say, all right, well, you need to decide. Are you willing to do this and have this happen? Or do you want to do this and have this happen? Or do you want to do that and have that happen? Okay. I think I know what I'm going to do. Okay. And then she would sit back and watch. Several times after the fact, she was like, I would have never done what you did. I'm really glad it worked out for you. Or, you know, all right, let's pick up the pieces. This is why this didn't work out the way you wanted it to. But I learned how to make decisions. I learned how to disagree at times. I learned how to navigate my own stuff. And I feel like what we're watching in the political realm is like two toddlers that can't share in the sandpit right now. And it's like, all right, guys, you're in the sandbox together and you're sitting there throwing sand back and forth at each other until somebody stops and is like, this is stupid. I'm getting out of the sandbox. Like, we can do this differently. it's one of those things, but it's trickling down, I think, at every level of society. When you want to talk about technology coming into place and all of that stuff that keeps those negotiating skills, relational skills distant, it's certainly a challenge.
Well, I think most of that stuff is because there's no like cost or benefit in agreeing or disagreeing. Everything's cheap and free because you're following somebody else's principles.
Yeah.
If you're always standing in waiting for the smart person to decide, then you got to keep looking at the smart person for the rest of your world. But I think we can dedicate an entire show to teaching how to increase your cost of decision making. You know, best thing to do is what you're doing is letting both the benefit and the consequence fall on the person making the decision. So if they make good decisions, good things happen. If they make poor decisions, that's, you know, trying to. So
yeah, I had one of our pastors at the church call me, and they were away this weekend and weren't going to be there, and they had somebody to cover their ministry stuff on Sunday, and they were like, they just called me, they're sick, what should I do? And I was like, you'll figure it out. And they were like, I could tell that was not the answer they wanted. I was like, just text me and let me know what you decide to do so that I'm aware. But I said, you'll figure it out. Well, I could do this and this. I said, you could. I said, I trust you to make the decision. And they were like, okay. And we hung up. It was super awkward because they wanted me just to tell them what to do.
But you had the conviction even when it got hard on your side, because how easy would have been just to answer their question for them?
I could have made the phone call and fixed it in 30 seconds. But, you know, if you do that, you're disabling people from learning how to navigate that stuff. And it's frustrating sometimes, especially, you know, watching my young kids or watching a young leader or somebody emerging on your team, and they're making a decision. You're going, oh, this is going to hurt. I can't say anything though. This is going to be painful, but they got to learn it. And I'll be there to help them clean it up, because I've cleaned this up for myself, or I've helped other people clean it up before. And I think the older I get and the longer I'm in leadership, I've watched enough people make similar mistakes. And it's one thing if they come and ask for wisdom, because I'm all for, hey, you should learn from other people's mistakes. It's way better than learning from your own. There's a lot of wisdom in that. But some people are just headstrong. And I like, you know, if you're not going to stop and ask, and you're not going to seek out, and you're not going to look for wise counsel, well then, Lord bless you, keep you. I will be there to help you clean up.
You know, my favorite line that pisses everybody off is, that's why it's my favorite line, is my favorite line is, get in a time machine, go back 2 weeks and ask me before you try. They hate that. They freaking hate it. But that's the only answer.
Yeah.
You got that time machine?
It's important. I think, you know, if you want growth and you want to learn and you want to learn how to work with people you don't agree with, you know, that's the other thing is, like, a lot of times in companies, in families, in churches, we say like, oh, you know, we're all good. We all get along so well. And what we have is agreement. And agreement's great. Agreement's really good. Agreement's fun. It's great when Joe and I agree and we can go to the same event. Like, oh, this, you know, this is red meat for both of us. That's fun.
Right.
But we don't have unity at that point. We just have agreement. We don't have unity until we disagree on something and decide to stay together. Yeah. This happens in a ton of marriages.
For sure.
Like, they get together and they're on the honeymoon phase and, oh man, this is so great. And she's so awesome. And then all of a sudden you disagree on something. And it's like, all right, well, up until this point, we haven't had any conflict. So it was easy. Well, now we have conflict and we have a choice to make. Are we going to be unified and stay together? And I feel like as a nation, we're watching this play out in big terms, right? So you have two parties that have come to some major disagreements, huge policy disagreements, philosophical disagreements, some disagreements that go to the root and heart of what our nation is and was founded on. I mean, these are not small things. We're not talking about we should put the traffic light at this street and not that street. We're not talking about how-tos. We're talking about whys. We're talking about deep things. And we've come to this spot where we have to ask the question, like, are we going to stay married? Like, realistically, you watch the red states are getting redder, the blue states are getting bluer. But if we're all Americans and we're willing to stay in this relationship, well, then we're going to have to figure out and go back to some of these things. But we're getting to a spot where it's like, all right, we've had agreement for a long time, right? Everybody agreed. This is, you know, if you went back to the 70s and the 80s and even the 60s for that matter, and you asked people the greatest nation on earth, everybody would answer the United States, the freest country on earth. All of those things, there was this pride in your country and everything that it stood for. And now we've drifted to a space where that's not true for every person that lives here. And so then we have to ask that question, like, all right, so we disagree on some things. Fine. Are we willing to work at it and stay married? I mean, so, that's what it boils down to.
So we got to increase the cost, though, of that agreement, because the agreement isn't valuable unless the disagreement has some consequences. So let me give you an example. So let's use a metaphor. So let's just say your kids are playing basketball and they're traveling all over the place. I'm like, hey, before we play basketball,
it's par for the course.
we play basketball. If we travel and I say you did and you say we didn't, if you make the penalty, we're going to have a duel and one of us is going to die. That means that there's more of a benefit of agreeing than disagreeing, and you want to do one more than the other. Mm. But if we make it so that there's no consequence to disagreeing, like if it's a throat punch or, you know, just yapping at each other, there's no cost. You could do that infinitely and there's no end to it. So that's why I say, like, you got to almost make it so that it's revered to figure out some authentic agreement so that we can avoid disagreement, because the disagreement should suck. It should always suck.
Yeah. So our kids, the sacred cow in our house that we slaughter regularly for the kids is their screen time. They only get 20 minutes a day. And they have to read 30 minutes to get that 20 minutes. And I know we're horrible parents for doing that. I'm sure we'll get a comment or an email. we do that because and it's not that we don't watch a movie. It's not that we don't do that stuff. But as far as their individual screen time, they're not glued to the Nintendo Switch. They're not glued to Netflix or whatever. They have to earn that screen time. And, their homework has to be done. They got to read, et cetera. And so when they get that 20 minutes, it's sacred for them. Like, they love that 20 minutes.
Currency right there.
They value it. Yep. And so when, for instance, typically at bedtime, we have a ton of conflict. Nobody's listening, partly because they're a little amped up and they're good kids. But we'll ask them to, hey, we need you to go to the bathroom, brush your teeth, whatever. And if I got to repeat that like 4 or 5 times, I'm like, that's it. Nobody gets screen time tomorrow. And it goes, wait, I'll go brush my teeth right now. And it's like the single file line. Everybody's lined up. Shh, don't say anything. Dad's upset. But that is like the only thing for, or at least this season, that gets their attention, because it's such high value, what you're talking about. So when the boys are constantly bickering or wrestling or whatever, and they're just at each other, I'm like, listen, if this does not end and you guys don't get along, we're just going to not have any screen time tomorrow. Now, unfortunately, sometimes that is a sentence for the parents, because we get 20 minutes, 60 minutes in the case of the boys. And, Charlotte typically will play an iPad game or something kind of, quietly. For her, I'm like, she reads so much. She probably has like infinite screen time from now till she dies, because she's read so much, but she doesn't keep track of it that way.
Well, you have good kids. See, I was a manipulator as a kid, so I would pretend to hate things. So you penalize me with things, and I'd pretend to like things that I didn't. So it would be the other way around. So if you said, hey, there's no screen time, I'm like, I don't really like screens anyway. I'm like, checkmate.
You would do that. I can totally see you doing that.
I can remember lots of instances of that.
I never wanted that in the first place.
Right. Break it. Go see if I can.
There's that video on YouTube. It reminds me, the dad takes the kid wouldn't cut the grass or something. So the dad takes all of his video games and throws them out on the lawn and then just starts running them over with the lawnmower. Yes. And the kid's freaking out.
Oh, yeah.
And, you look at stuff like that. My dad threatened with stuff like that. Like, I'm going to break the Nintendo or whatever. There was one time as a kid growing up, I remember after 8 o'clock, we were not allowed to play. And I'm talking going back like regular Nintendo, like Mario Brothers and Mario Brothers. And just for you. And Duck Hunt. You remember Duck Hunt, right? With the gun and everything. So there was one night where I played past the time. My dad was like, here's the deal, son. Like, if you play past the time again, I will smash it with a baseball bat. And if we're done, you'll never have it again. And we were like, I think I was maybe 7. I remember going to bed thinking like, oh, well, like 3 days later, my dad's upstairs. My brothers and I are in bed and the Nintendo's on. My dad starts, Douglas, I swear to God, if you're on that thing, I'm storming down the steps. And I'm like, I'm in my bed. It's not me. My mom's down there playing Duck Hunt. My dad's threatening to cancel Christmas and Easter and everything else.
Thanks,
but and my mom's like, boo, boo, shooting Duck Hunt. But, you look at that sort of stuff and it does come down to motivations. Like, what's going to motivate us to come back into relationship? Because realistically, Roe v. Wade is not the issue. It's exposing the issue that, we have some philosophically different ideals between two sides of the country. But I actually think we're closer together than most people think. You and I talk about this all the time. There is this common ground in the middle And most people tend to be not polarizing to the left or polarizing to the right. They tend to be in this middle spectrum.
But when they're able to market everything as something divisive, right, then it feels like everything is divisive.
Because it's all about clicks. Clicks and money, 100%. Sure. But I feel like people are catching on. Like I feel like the jig's up. Like some of that has been so exposed lately. The last, 24 to 48 months. Like it's been so obvious. Like nobody's hiding their cards anymore on either side of the aisle. Like it's very obvious and they're playing their hands very open. And I just feel like that for a lot of people, they're just unsubscribing to the chaos. I can't tell you the last time I clicked on a mainstream news article. I used to check Fox News and CNN every day just to see the different sides of the stories and the way the headlines were going to read, because I knew I was getting, two different sides. And when you check that every day, first of all, you live in a stressful spot. So, if you want to decrease your stress, just stop checking those things. It's a beautiful thing. But, at some level, then you start to, at least for me, I start to feel ill-informed. Like somebody be like, oh, did you hear? I'm like, no, I didn't hear that. And so I had to find a news source. I had to find some of that information elsewhere. And but the mainstream are really, they both have those threads, and their end goal is not information. Their end goal is clicks and dollars. And so it's to their advantage to fight.
Yeah. My informer is you. So I don't think there's anything, and you tell me if there's anything that I should pay attention to. I've outsourced it.
Yeah. Well, let's pray for Jim now.
Can I ask you a this is a heavy topic. So I want to ask you, how'd your Eagles do during the draft?
Good.
How do you rate them?
Everybody's rating them really well. I was away at a conference. I didn't see the draft. I found out, on Bleacher Report or whatever. But, they traded for A.J. Brown, which I was excited about. I think that's a good trade for us. And that we only had 5 picks. But it all addressed needs. I'll be interested to see. I was telling Pastor Mike while we were munching on some tacos, I watched a podcast clip. They were talking about previous drafts and the draft grades that teams got coming out of the draft and which were right and which were wrong. And the Seattle Seahawks, the year they drafted Russell Wilson in the 3rd round, I think they drafted like Earl Thomas. They drafted like 3 or 4 of their kingpins of their Super Bowl, just guys that have turned out to be total like studs. And they got an F grade in the draft because everybody's like, Russell Wilson's not that good. They reached for him. This person's not that. And we really won't know till 2, 3, 4 years in.
I trust Doug's rating more than Bleacher Report's rating. So were you excited that they filled the gaps?
Yeah, I think it's football's going to be a fun season. I think the Eagles always do decently. I'm excited to see the way the season goes. I think the teams that got really, did really well. I loved, some of the moves Denver made. I think they're going to be pretty good. It's interesting that Tom Brady came back. My son Graham is very excited about that. I keep telling him he's going to have to find another place to live if he roots for the Buccaneers, but he doesn't seem to care.
No.
I'll be interested to see how a couple of these teams shake out. But it'll be interesting for sure.
All right. Yeah. I got nothing on it. I haven't paid attention to anything. So I don't even know. I knew who the Browns drafted, but I really don't have a.
I feel so bad for Baker.
Do you?
I get it. Like, they went after Deshaun Watson and everybody's got an opinion on him. And he's got, some legal troubles, to say the least. I'm not a Browns fan, so I don't necessarily have a dog in the fight. But, some people are like, I'm never going to a Browns game ever again. And other people are like, oh, we're finally going to win. And, anytime you pick a controversial player, particularly for character reasons, you're going to have that. But I just feel bad for Baker because I just feel like Baker so was the city. Like, he was gritty. He wasn't the best quarterback, but man, like, he had that heart. You kind of rooted for him as the underdog, and he seemed to go out there and give his all. And I thought he was very Cleveland, if that makes sense. Yeah. And then they just like, oh, we're gonna go for this guy, and now he's like in limbo, doesn't know where he's gonna be. And I don't know.
Almost feels like cheated on. Like, I picture if you're the guy and put all of this into you, and then you watch them like dating, and I'm like, that feels icky,
Yeah. I'm sure Justin on the sports show.
Yeah.
Has done a bunch of talk about that, and I'm sure the draft, and I'm sure he's talking about NBA finals, and that I don't follow that all that much, baseball's finally, I think, back. finally got some agreement on things.
Well, we got heavy and we needed to break that up and talk about something meaningless, like sports.
Yeah, but sports are one of those things that aren't meaningless, right? So like when the Phillies won the World Series or the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I went to the Phillies parade in Philadelphia. I'm telling you, there were people that voted and people that didn't vote. There were Democrats, there were Republicans, there was everybody in between, but we were all there in our Phillies gear yelling at the top of our lungs. I forget how many.
So you're saying if I didn't watch sports for a year, I would shrivel. That's how purposeful it is.
No, I'm saying it has a purpose in bridging gaps that aren't bridged otherwise.
That's true. Yeah, and it has utility.
Yeah, because rich people watch it, poor people watch it, all different ethnicities watch it. And so it's one of those things that brings it all together. It's why so many people got frustrated when it got political and you started having the protests and you started the NFL started taking positions or the NBA or whatever. It got very frustrating because it was one of those things, rewind just 20 years ago, that like, it was just football. It was just basketball. It was just baseball.
There are certain things that are still pretty pure. I mean, like food brings people together without being political.
Totally agree.
Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas, and all that. Kind of and then, like music. I mean, it could have a moment where it unites without being political. It's been, there's some times that.
But all of those are tools. And the thing that stinks is when they get weaponized politically, you lose another tool in the belt that can bring more people together.
Right. Movies are the same thing. Like, when is the last time you saw an actual hero doing the hero stuff in a movie?
Yeah.
It almost doesn't exist.
Yeah.
The hero is the person that's the wokest, right? And that's pretty much all.
Yep. That's, it's sad. But so. In regards to some of that, and you talk about libertarian and business stuff, and you love seeing that, but you have companies now, like the Daily Wire started their own publishing company, and I think they just released their second or third full-length movie, and they're really good, action and all this stuff, and they've done away with the, hey, this isn't political, we're just going to tell a good story. This isn't about this, but everybody deserves to be heard. So you can come print your book here. And, it's not like, those guys at the Daily Wire are sitting around going, well, if I don't agree with this, we're not publishing it. They're giving a voice to people that have been silenced elsewhere. And so it's causing these other organizations, other media to rise up and to print and to create. And I think that's in the long run, that's really good. Instead of where you just had Netflix and Hulu, I think for the longest time, even though you may not like Disney Plus, it's great that there's another option. Even though you may not like Amazon Prime, it's great that there's another option. Even though you might not like Peacock or fill in the blank, that's fine. You don't have to like
the
them all,
theorem would
but
be
you can that. Buy that. You can buy the ones you want and get rid of the ones you don't want.
You break up the have tos of the 60 channels that you don't have an option in. You break it up and a couple of them go away, which you don't focus on the ones that went away. You focus on then what
like CNN Plus.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, shots fired. It was on the air for like 5 minutes and they put $100 million into it.
They needed your support. And they couldn't do it.
No. It's garbage. Mm. I don't do garbage, Joe.
All right.
Well, anyway, Joe and I disagree on a lot of things. We're going to do a show where we disagree.
I will even disagree for the sake
take
of
the
it.
Show.
If I really agree, we'll just do a fake disagreement show.
Universal basic income, or we'll pick a topic that's charged, and we'll pick different sides. And I think it's good. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.